A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We had that whole thing last week, Jules Gill, where we were trying to do a lovely little podcast, and then we desynced, and my side just ate itself, and you had to finish the podcast by yourself.
Oh, is that what happened, is it? Oh, fantastic. Good times.
Yeah. Well, you were there. You did it yourself.
Mate, I can't even remember what happens yesterday, let alone what happens last week. So you tell me, if you said that happened, if you told me the world exploded and rebuilt itself in Minecraft, I would say, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah. You were going to give me £1,000 and then you were going to send, you know.
I don't remember that. Though. Specifically, when it comes to money, I'm actually quite good on that.
We should say this is the Entitled Panda podcast, the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP!
Squeezing it in between What Culture Gaming Future Game Show when we both can. Busy lives.
Betwixt the cheeks. Mate, it's just slipping in there, because I tell you what, the UBP nearly didn't happen. It's the show they wanted to cancel because time itself didn't want to actually let it happen.
But
because
the world
I'm working
couldn't
now
handle.
Full time at Future Game Show, plug. And Scott is obviously a man in the fort over at What Culture. It was a case of, do our calendars actually sync up? No, they don't. Fantastic.
We have a little bit of a crossover in terms of some of the stuff that you're still doing for the channel, but after that's done, it's all systems go with the Future Game Show, which also it's worth shouting out is on Saturday night. We're not putting it together on What Culture Gaming side, but that is what Future Game Show, the channel, is all about. So
do you want me to have a 15-second plug for it?
Go on, get a little one in there.
So people should actually go over to our Future Game Show TikTok, which is FGS. They should go follow us over there, because we're going to be live streaming reactions to our own show, because I've not seen anything about it. I don't know what's going to be there. So I'm going to do a live reaction to the show. There's going to be world premieres of stuff, a VR live event, or some sort of showcase for VR titles. And it's going to be hosted by Yuri Lowenthal and Laura Bailey, who were the voices from Marvel's Spider-Man. So that's pretty cool.
Spoken perfectly.
Plug, 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 plug. But you know what? Let's get off that that high horse and instead jump straight into the trough, because I'm pretty sure there's loads of questions that people need answering.
Well, I tell you what, we had the Summer Games Show, Summer Games Fest was last night. Bit of a divisive reaction to it. I absolutely loved it. And then when I was watching it, I was messaging Josh back and forward. And then Josh Brown was like, I'm hating this. There's only like one or two things that I care about. And then I looked online and that seems to be most of the response to it.
That's
so
interesting.
I thought it was good.
Because this is obviously meant to be, there's no E3, so this is our E3. People had very high expectations going in, but they forget potentially that the Sony showcase had just happened. Xbox has got its own separate one. Every single developer has decided to partition off what their new things are. So it's a case of what is left to show, and they're not going to want to give their first party titles to someone else to get the exclusive on. It's like, what we really got from this was like, oh, Spider-Man 2 now has a release date, fantastic. I mean, that is good, but I do feel that could have been dropped at the showcase with the PlayStation 1. It felt like you were just like, what, we're waiting a few extra days for you to just tell us what we should have already been presented with? Weird.
I think as well, there was a lot of weird damp squib stuff with when Spider-Man 2 came up on the screen, it was like, oh my god, we're going to get something really cool, and then obviously the dude comes out, Brian Intihar, and just says like, actually all I've got got for you as a release date and some artwork and here's Venom and kinda, but not in a cutscene or anything.
It's a weird one that, isn't it? Because it's like you showed more technically on your Sony showcase, but told less, and here you told more, but showed less. Like we're not striking a middle ground that is leaving anyone happy. There's a few other things as well that were a bit weird, because it's like, we'll go into a few of them, I'm pretty sure, in greater detail, but the highlights for the wrong reasons would be Prince of Persia for me.
I love that.
That's the thing. Right, Kate, so we should talk about this.
Yes.
Prince of Persia fan, I know you're a big fan. I'm a huge fan of Sands of Time. It's one of my favourite games ever, and I played the original way, way, way back in the day.
Were you not a Warrior Within and Two Thrones person?
I kind of dropped off around that time, because Warrior Within was a bit too emo, edgy for me, and I was just coming out of that phase. Yeah, yeah. So I was like yeah. But this was like, you were saying that this feels like that, but for a new generation, because it's the edge, it's the hello fellow kids, this is what the cultural nuance is right now, and it's like here's modern hip-hop. So the way that I was thinking of it is like whoever made this trailer had watched Into the Spider-Verse and said yes, let's do that, but also let's not have as much charm or any like...
Well, I don't think anyone in a marketing sense can figure out Gen Z, and they keep trying. They keep trying these different things, and they end up going in the buckets of like Fortnite adjacent stuff or something like Immortals Phoenix Rising.
It did look like Fortnite, let's face it.
Yeah, and like that's like the go-to. And that's the thing, when they were showing it off, I was like, what the hell is this? Because it had the color palette of Prince of Persia. It looked quite similar. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, but the Prince of Persia remake is canceled. What is this thing? And then I was blown away by the gameplay. It was literally just like, that was some of the most polished Ubisoft gameplay I've ever seen. Yeah. And I was like, the fact that they're doing this like 2D meets 3D platformer with these like execution moves and all these really cool camera zooms and like
big bang so cool. Of like Blasphemous, but also Metroid Dread. It had that sort of feel of like, okay, we're going for heavy action here, and we're gonna have lots of like spectacle moments. But it's a case of, is the flash just hiding a lack of substance? Because what I was actually seeing in terms of gameplay was very simplistic. I was like, where's any of the time mechanic shenanigans? That is what Prince of Persia is known for, not the action per se. So why are we're trading on this and basically saying this action game could have been anything else, but we slapped a Prince of Persia title
on it? Yeah, that was the realization as the trailer rolled out, of just being like, oh, was this something else entirely at one point? And you've just called it Prince of Persia. But yeah, I mean, for me, I thought the game looked really solid, although you are right that they didn't really showcase the time stuff at all. But yeah, I think overall, in terms of like obviously people reacting to the art style, the direction, the tone and stuff, to me, it just reminded me of Warrior Within, which like was entirely 2005, the aesthetic, Godsmack's on the soundtrack, I Stand Alone and all that kind of stuff. I was so into that at the time, and so I'm just hoping that someone who is a teenager, or so, you know, that could be their Warrior Within or something that works for them. I think we're in a weird space where, because so much data is available to marketing companies, and you know, like trying to do a data driven like perfect game for the youth, it's almost impossible to do that in a genuine sense anymore, because it is so you know, all these ideas are like test cased to death. So I wonder, but I don't know, I thought it had promise. I just it was more just being surprised that it was Ubisoft and it ran well. It was just that was one thing.
Speaking of running well, can we just talk about bloody Sonic Superstars?
Yeah, we can talk about, oh my god, there was so many things.
And here is the great divergence, people. I knew it was coming. Like the little face that Scott made here is just absolutely nuclear bombed my thing. That I bloody hated that. I'm not gonna lie, with a passion, mate. I was just like, as soon as I saw him run from the aesthetic that I wanted Sega to actually continue, because they refused to give us Sonic Mania 2, and it's just like they're almost just saying at this point, you're never gonna get it.
No, they're never gonna do that again.
Stop asking for it. You're going to eat this gruel and be happy that you get anything. And it was like, there was nothing about the gameplay that I didn't like. I thought that the new power-ups and costumes, fine, but wouldn't it look so much better if it was in 2D sprite animation that was given the same love as the Sonic Mania stuff? That would be so those images. They just look really like, well, it was like PS2 graphics. I was like, well, we're done with this, aren't we?
I think, to me, it's all going to be in the gameplay. The one thing that stood out to me, ironically, hilariously, was that it didn't look that fast. And I was like, okay, you have to have...
It did look quite slow, didn't
it? Yeah. Yeah, and I was like, well, I guess because you have up to four characters at once, so you have this idea of multiplayer Sonic, which we've never really had before, other than like Sonic 2, just two players.
Almost like there's a reason for that, mate.
Well, the thing is, their like fallback was like, back in the day, was like split screen, because you fundamentally can't keep up together. So in this one, they've slowed the whole game down so you can both get through it. And I don't know about that. But I did pop, as the wrestling kids say, for Sonic in general. I did sort of go, oh my God, a new Sonic. And because we have Sonic Frontiers DLC this year as well, and there's Sonic Origins Plus. Not that I'm getting that again, because they're just charging too much for it. And apparently Sega Superstars is 60 quid.
Somebody timestamp that so that I can play it back to Scott when he inevitably tells me that he's bought the collector's edition of whatever version that's come out there, because it will happen.
It might happen. I looked at it last night going, what is the plus? What does that mean? And it just means they've added a bunch of Game Gear games on, which I don't care about random bonus versions of Sonic that I never played anyway. But yeah, that idea of sort of doing like a super cutesy Sonic, I'm there for it, but it'll all be in how it plays. I like the little pixelated version of the squids that came out.
Yeah, that's fine, but wouldn't that again look even better if it was just like hand-drawn 2D animation style sprite work? That would be amazing. Like, even better, I feel like we are at the nexus point now where Sonic needs another revamp. It's had its kind of like, everyone was fascinated about Sonic Mania. That's significantly died down. Frontiers has not stayed the as much as Sega wanted to, because we're not talking about it now. I don't hear anyone talking about how that's going to...
Not in 2023, but I feel like it was everywhere across last year.
Yeah, for a good hot week, and then it just kind of dropped off. And I feel like now we need that little reinvention point. Why not go back to the drawing board and literally redraw Sonic? Like, give him like a chibi art style. Give him something different. Like, manga Sonic would be cool. Anime. Like, you know what I mean? Like, give him something really fresh to look at.
I tell you what we'll end up getting. It'll be Spider-Verse style Sonic, because
loads of games are moving in towards that.
Yeah,
now.
That is the new art style. And that is kind of being used as like the go-to. And I mean, the new TMNT movies kind of got that. Street Fighter 6 kind of has that, arguably. I'm all for that. I love Spider-Verse. Like, I'm kind of all for that style. That's interesting, though, because they tried that with Sonic Boom and everyone hated it. So I think they've just kind of stepped right back from that and gone like, okay, here's little pot-belly Sonic like he used to be. Little chibi Sonic. And we'll just stick with that. And they sort of did the crossover with Generation and kind of go with that. But yeah, I think overall, though, like for SGF, my personal only negative was the bit at the very end when Keighley had been building up to this big finale, and then he was like, okay guys, like the rumors are true, oh my God, I've got this thing.
DoorDash.
The burrito DoorDash thing was hilarious.
That popped me huge, man. The amount of memes I saw about that.
Because I was like, he's just steering into it. I know what you guys are going to think, but here's this other thing. But then in the case of the final thing, that was meant to be more genuine, but then it also was just another Rebirth trailer, and that wasn't something that was heavily rumored or whatever. Like, the more he was talking about that, it felt like it was going to be Final Fantasy IX's remake or something, because that has been rumored.
I was like, cool. And then I saw people going into meltdown on social media saying like, oh my God, can you imagine how big it's going to be because it's on two discs? I was like, that's... You realize that's not a selling point, right?
The two-disc thing is weird.
Like I don't know. We've moved away from the PS2 era of bigger equals better. We have done this. We've experienced how having nothing in game worlds means there's nothing to do. Like, if they're going to be walking around a massive desert that just goes, oh, man, you won't believe the hard drive space that this desert takes up. Like, there's nothing in it to do. Why are we doing it?
Yeah, I wonder how much Elden Ring and what the hell's that, Diablo? Like, it's sort of like more modern open world stuff. Definitely Elden Ring in terms of the way that it rolls its map out. If that's rejuvenated people's interest in, oh, okay, the open world genre isn't dead because it's the Ubisoft formula that needed to die. And Tears of the Kingdom is another one that sort of just has a more natural approach to an open world. It was a weird thing to do.
Imagine like saying that two discs is a selling point. I just don't get it. Like I understood back in the day when you looked at a game and you were like, I'm getting four discs worth. That's going to be like an epic content thing. It's so meaningless. Like 99% of the people are going to download this game rather than play it on discs. So you'll be, it uses two hard drives worth of space. When you put it like that, that sounds like an absolute arse of a game.
Well, that was the first thing I thought of, because I don't know what a PS5 disc's maximum capacity is, but you already have.
I was going to bully everything off of it. Everything.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm just like, is it two discs because it's actually like 250 or 300 gig? Like, if you do download it, like, it has to be a downloadable version of it.
Imagine if you have to download it in partitions.
So I assume that it has
to be that. Download it and it goes like, oh, in order to play this bit on here, you're going to need to download the other 75 gigabyte patch, and it deletes the one that you've just downloaded to carry your saves over. This could be so brutally horrible. I'm drinking it in.
Well, across the last few years, there was that whole thing about how big Call of Duty was getting, and like, I think there's a 150 gig version of that right now.
Smelly.
And then in very smelly. And of course, the last sort of releases of Warzone, like you said, you can partition those things off and only keep the campaign, only keep the multiplayer or whatever, but it's still massive file sizes. And the assumption was across this generation we would figure that stuff out, but instead they've kind of just steered into it, theory anyway.
I guess we'll see how it goes.
But in the way that they were showing that stuff off as well, and we're not going to do spoilers for Final Fantasy VII, but I I just, the things they're teasing and the order they're teasing them in, I guess because I know the way it's going, I'm just like, this is the weirdest way to tell this story.
Yeah, I get that because it's like a remake, they're trying to express that everything that you know from the past will be changed or in some form or another. And that's
Sephiroth
fine.
Kills Tifa in the trailer, apparently.
Yeah, it's that's fine. You can do this because of the fact that it's your story to tell. And that's okay. There will always be the originals if you don't like the new version. However, having the original versions to hand and having it be regarded as one of the best stories told on the PlayStation 1, if not of all JRPGs, why would you want to mess this much with the proven formula with an arguably much weaker angle? Because it's like, oh, is Tifa a robot? It's like, who the hell cares about that? Like,
well, my thing
brother.
Was... You know, they should, like, at the end of the Final Fantasy VII remake from 2020, you fight Sephiroth. You do the big fight against him, which obviously in the main game you don't do until way, way later. Mm-hmm. But in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth that we've just seen, you're still getting the scene where Cloud is telling everybody in calm about Sephiroth.
Yeah.
But they've already done the big climactic fight. It's
you're
just
trying
weird.
To put the genie back in the bottle to do it again. Yeah. Oh, do you know what else like blew my mind in like a worst way possible? Mm. They showed the gameplay slices, but they left the numbers on. And I hated seeing low value number damage show up the battles, because I was like, by this point in time, most players had overleveled their characters. They'd gotten to a point where they were doing thousands of points of damage going on. To see Red 13 do a measly, piddly 50 points a hit, it's just kind of like, you're really drawing me out of this experience, because how are you going to explain that? That they all went into a simultaneous coma and forgot everything? Is that where we're going? Because no, thank you.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I remember thinking that after playing through the original, because you can do so much leveling in that, and you can find things like the ultimate weapons and everything. How are they possibly going to continue that? Because they have all these late game things in what is now the first part of a trilogy, and so the only thing you can do is just wipe the slate clean and reset everybody and hope that
it's
people find that
satisfying.
Such
a rug pull for people who, like, say you've chained those two games together and you went through the end, you'd got all the ultimate weapons, you maxed out everyone, you start part two of disc one, and you just go like, oh cool, I've got nothing, and they do it in like sort of like, oh, looks like you slipped and bonked your head. And I need to get that scene too, because if I'd forgotten all of that and lost all my stuff, there would be questions.
I think they're going to do that, though. I think that, because obviously at the end of Seven, Remake Seven, like the end of what is now the first third, you have that big sort of world-altering event, at least in terms of the area that they're in with all the whispers and everything else. Again, not specifics. But coming out of that, do you just have characters just go like, oh, we're recovering so much, so we're actually weaker now and we need to reset it or something? Grown. And then what do you do for part three as well? They have to figure out something for that.
I know.
But yeah, it was overall, I really enjoyed it. I mean, a lot of people's questions, I mean, I specifically asked what people's, were thinking about it. Prince of Persia was brought up quite a lot as just like a general sort of thing.
We should actually answer some people's questions. As
we will.
We've had a bant.
We are. We have a little bant, a little rant every now and then. But yeah, massive thank you to everybody for sending in your various questions and talking points. Honest NPC says, good day, legends. Hope you're well.
Hello.
As this is game trailer season, what is your opinion on developers' reaction to fan backlash when a game is announced? Do you think developers should stick with their vision like Wind Waker or make changes to address backlash?
Okay, so you think that when people see game trailers and then they have a universally negative reception and then they say, right, we're pulling it to rework it.
I guess like
that.
Suicide Squad.
Like, honestly, I think that that's the most important thing, is because you could test all of these things with test demographics, you know, when they just go through film trailer stuff and they get people to like say what you think about them. That's one thing when it's a closed off circle of people. But when you put it out to the public, it's a completely different thing, because you're getting a real engagement of what your game is being received as. And I think that it's really, really important. I don't think that...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think that the public should have some sway over developers and publishers, but they shouldn't have complete control over how they do it, because you shouldn't be like reprogramming your game because people are like, oh, you can't pet the dog in this game, so therefore I'm not going to buy it. It's like, that's different to, oh, you've put predatory microtransactions in your game and it's going to hamper how much we enjoy it. That is something to fix. And it can be very positive, because do you remember what happened with Bloodstained Ritual of the Night?
Mm-hmm. Change the art style.
Yeah, so they put it out and then they were like, this is ugly. I really hate the look of this. And you know what? The developer came back out and said, you know what? You're totally right. We've revamped the entire graphical system and we're doing it this way. Mm-hmm. Plus, there's the other story recently with, I think it was Final Fantasy 16. Mm. People were complaining about the UI. Okay. Said that it didn't look very nice. And then the developer, or 15, I can't remember which one it was. Somebody will correct me on this one. But the developers came back and said, look, we've changed it. It's like, well, this is how we want it to be. And then they reverted back and said, you know what, actually, you're wrong. You, the audience, are wrong, because this doesn't actually work for us. And I was like, that's also important.
See, that, I think open dialogues are cool. I just, for me, I'm all about the artists. I'm all about the author, the authored intent. So I'm always just like, how much are you believing in that vision? Is having audience feedback or that communal relationship part of the vision? You actually want to have something where you're bouncing ideas off a community, like the new Skate game that is very much like in tandem with the community. And Wind Waker is an interesting example from Honest NPC, because Nintendo changed that game when they released it for the HD vision.
Yes.
Like all the fetch quests towards the end were shortened and things like that. Same with Ocarina of Time, like the version on 3DS. They changed the water temple. They redesigned it. They made it easier. So I, like, over time, maybe a developer is like, actually, you know what? That bit was cumbersome. That's not what we intended. Let's change that thing. But for me, it's all about the intent of the original vision. I, when reading this question, thought of the new Prince of Persia, and I don't want that to change. Like, I get the potential negatives of it, and I have no idea how much the new version respects anything even close to either the game or actual Persian history. I have no idea, Persian culture. But I want to see what they're doing, and then I want to make opinions on that. I don't want it to be this try and please everybody thing, because you end up with stuff like Rise of Skywalker, where it just does
nothing for anyone, because you're too afraid to change things or to move on or to provide anything other than, well, this is what the most average people will like.
Yeah, exactly. And I always just want, like, creative visions. If there is a vision there, unless your specific idea is we're trying to build something for a community and then trying to balance with that.
I like the idea of like a director's cut video game style thing, though. Like, we do it so much with films that it doesn't do as much with video games. The remasters and remakes definitely tread towards this. But I remember there was, because Bethesda were talking about, or there was a rumor going around that Fallout 1 and 2 may get a remaster.
Okay.
And I was watching Tim Kaines, who was like one of the original creators of the game way back way. He was talking about how he regrets a few things. And maybe regret's a strong word, and I don't mean any disrespect, but he just said there were a few things that he introduced that maybe he wished he hadn't done.
Okay, that's
such as in Fallout 2, you can actually meet ghosts. They introduced apparitions. So they'd obviously got this like post-apocalyptic survivalist story, but then they added in the supernatural element, because you could help this ghost find a lost bracelet, and they made that canon. So it wasn't like, it wasn't a side quest. It was actually like part of just your day-to-day experiences there. So I think that if he went back and they remastered it, he would want stuff like that taken out. because it affects the overall canon going forward. It makes our lives easier to not have ghosts be canon.
Yeah. Plus, they can see how the story goes over time. And they so actually, no, the world makes more sense in this direction.
Yeah, we'll
try and retcon stuff. Yeah, I mean, you're getting bits of that with Final Fantasy VII. There's like various, like the scenario designers and stuff go back to that game and tweak different stuff. I mean, Final Fantasy VII Remake is in itself very reflective of how big Cloud versus Sephiroth has become in gaming culture.
Because they're just
like
leaning
in
into it, aren't they? It's just like,
he was like a way more mysterious character. Yeah, for me, it's always going to be, is there a vision there at all? And do we need to respect it and whatever? But I would always want something to be there before I have feedback on it. I just want the authority in that exchange has to come from the creator, at least for me anyway. Question from Elfar Oliver, who says, just want to know, does Jules use earplugs at concerts? Sorry, just want to know, since Jules uses earplugs at concerts, does he also use sunglasses at the movies? And what did we think of the new Spider-Verse movie? Haven't felt such anticipation for a sequel since Infinity War. Do you want to address this slander, Jules?
Okay, so yeah, I know that a lot of people were like, oh, you wear earplugs to go to gigs. I don't want to destroy my ears. I'm sorry, man.
I had a lot of people reach out to me and be like, dude, what the hell? How are you not wearing earplugs?
So it's a case of like, why? I mean, no, I don't wear sunglasses when I go to the movies because my eyes aren't being as
it's not set to a level
barraged by light and
like the way
I would sound. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's just because of it's a safety precaution. And to be fair, I go to or used to go to a lot of incredibly heavy gigs. So it was a case of it is just for the betterment of everyone that I don't have a constant ringing in my ear. Like,
yes. Oh, no, save. I mean, there's nothing worse. And especially when you come out of a gig and you have that thinking, is this me forever now? Am I actually going to get rid of this or not?
Especially when it lasts like the second day, because the first day you're like, okay, that's fine. I expected to have some sort of some damage effectively. Mm-hmm. But when it goes into the second day, you're like, oh no.
Especially when you hit like your 30s and stuff and it's like, oh, is this what the hearing sounds like now? Yeah. Where I just don't have full hearing. Spider-Verse stuff, I don't know if you've seen Across the Spider-Verse yet.
I haven't yet. No. Okay. I was going to go this weekend.
It is a good time. I love Spider-Verse. I'm loving its, we mentioned before, like its overall impact on entertainment and art across the Spider-Verse itself. Yeah. But would massively recommend it. Question from Sean O'Byrne, who says, what would we rather have? A video game industry where developers and publishers tell you everything that happens during the production of video games, or B, you hear nothing from developers or publishers until a day before launch with no info for years?
Oh, that's such a tough question to answer because I actually want both. Like, it's weird to be so hypocritical and ask for full transparency with game development, but also at the same time want to be surprised by new stuff. I think that
I would take the first personally, just because I'm fascinated by the creation process. And for me, I think it will be a net positive on a long enough timeline that people understand the making of games and can get on board with those teams and would understand if something went sideways. But it would require complete transparency as to all the top level corporate decisions that, you know, get in the way, etc. But I think you would empower developers and the right decision makers in that process. At least you would hope so.
You're kind of weighing up two options as... The first one is better for the creators and at a slower pace for the people within the game industry, like us, the players. Whereas the other one of no information whatsoever is for the players, but comes at the cost of the artist because they may be being treated badly. You won't know of anything until it's far too late. And if that information never makes its way out, then bad practices will continue over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's a shame, though, because we kind of had it very good in the early era before the internet really took off, you and I, because... our only source of information would be like printed media. So we would go, all the demo discs and stuff we got onto like official PlayStation magazine. You'd go down there, you'd read every single page, gleaning every bit of information that was there. So you'd know about these games, but you wouldn't know that much about them. You'd have to wait a little bit.
It was all very curated back then.
Yeah, and it all like built that anticipation as to like what the game was going to be. So that when you finally did go into your local game store and see that a game was just there that wasn't there before, you'd be like, the surprise, the shock, the excitement was so real. But that's just from the player. If we were told about it all in excruciating detail, like you say, beforehand in those magazines, would we be as anticipating? I don't know.
Well, that's
it's a really tough question to answer.
Yeah, plus it would affect the like the bell curve, the spike of like the interest graph, because the loads of marketing is built on building up the hype and capitalizing at the apex of that curve, which you wouldn't have anymore. It would be more of like a steady line. And then it'd be weird because people would be following projects for years on end, and either that pays off or they'd just be tired by the time it's eventually meant to come out.
I think that in terms of like a moral thing, though, we probably should both be advocating for the former rather than the latter, because even though it would be lovely to be constantly surprised, you can still be surprised by game studios even when you think you know everything.
Like, yes,
the development process for like The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, for example, there was lots of little teasers, little bits of information, but it was all done through the Nintendo lens, so you only saw what they wanted you to see, yet that game is obviously a massive success. So
yeah, I think there are massive benefits to waiting and shadow dropping stuff later. It's just that hopefully you have the right stuff to shadow drop, because I guess if you also remove the feedback from the consumer side, then if something is terrible, you have a day to react to it if it's coming out the day after. Next question from KTM421, who says, good afternoon. I want to know what's your favorite E3 fail. Mine is Naughty Dog's Uncharted 4 gameplay, where the game glitched out in the market scene and Nathan Drake froze in place. They even made fun of it by making a trophy called Stage Fright.
Yeah. That was amazing. Like, talk about a good recovery from that to make it into, like, to make a meme into something where you go, look, yeah, fair enough. It didn't work the way we wanted it to. And I just felt so bad for the people who must have been there doing the demo at the time, because there's nothing worse than getting out there and something going wrong in front of a crowd, because you can't explain to them. You can't just be like, look, I'm really sorry, we're experiencing some technical difficulties. That sentence lasts, what, 3 seconds?
Yeah.
If it goes on for minutes, you're like, I'm out of material now, guys. Do you want me to start doing stand-up? Like, hey, yo, so where you come from?
E3 like, demos, remember, right? Yeah, it was always like, live demo, folks. Like, that was like the go-to sort of quote or whatever.
Yeah.
For me, I don't think of anything specific. I've watched a lot of Kroby Cat compilations of older E3s, and I remember most of them anyway. For me, it's when Ubisoft would try someone like Mr. Caffeine, or they'd try like a really over the top character that just doesn't gel from the beginning, but you're stuck with them for like 2 hours or whatever it is. So I don't have a specific one, but it's more just like the tendency of E3 to be as like, I don't know, aggressively quirky as possible, and then it just falling down.
Because we end up in that horrible valley of you're trying to appease stock investors who don't necessarily know much about video games, but know that it's wacky, over the top, and it's all about the hype. And then you've got the actual gamers who feel very, very, they withdraw when it's like a level of cringe like that. It's like nuclear radiation to them. And I remember that there was like, I can't remember which expo it was, but they got in some hype casters to call a match as
an
esports one.
Yep.
And they were like, oh, he's going for the point. Whoa, my God. Oh, he's got the triple whammy. And it's just because it's just two people talking about a game that no one's experienced before, so they're not entirely sure what the mechanics are, and you've got a live audience of people that are just like, oh, I feel uncomfortable, because even if I know this game, I'm not going to be going like, yeah, go Red Team, and they like turn to the crowd like, come on guys, give them some support. It's like, we don't know what's going on. like this is horrible for you and us. We're embarrassed for you.
Yeah, why are you dragging us into this? I kind of thought that during the SGF, when they had that dude out that was advertising Marvel Snap, I thought he was right on the line of being like energetic and loud. I thought he made it work. But that's the kind of dude that you need to make that stuff work. He was like self-aware, because he's like laughing at himself when some of his stuff didn't land, and I was like, cool, you get it, what you're putting the rest of us through.
I utterly hate, and I think that this can go for any of my sort of like most cringy funny moments, are when you've got two people up there that are trying to sound naturalistic but are working from such a tightly regulated script that there is no feasible human connection whatsoever. So it's like, hey, Scott, can you believe that I managed to score that headshot from 50 yards away? And you'd be like, wow, that's a real headache.
What, it's just sort of like, did you use the 0.50 cal? Mate, I got that as a pre-order bonus. Oh my God.
It's like, no,
I'll do that
way.
Too.
Oh, that's amazing. Like, do you remember when all of those Tom Clancy games decided that they would try and use that in every demo presentation? Yeah. And Anthem. Oh, that was so bad. When they were like, I'm coming up onto the point now. Oh, Roger, Roger, I'll be there in three. And it's like, oh, two. It's just like, two, one, lands there. It's like, oh my God.
It's like, no one plays with this degree of like.
I will give you a real interaction between gamers playing Anthem. Turn your volume up for this one here.
The click.
hold on, boys. I'm just get a drink. I'll be right back.
Wait, and then they play some like copyrighted pop song in the background where they do like.
Yeah, I'm back, guys. I'm back. Right, okay.
Yeah, I think overall, that attempt to try and replicate gamer quirk, like that we can do that naturally. I think there's always a way to do it good or bad.
Like an anime fan on prom night.
That was the absolute apex of the worst of it. Final question from the 159th Gunner of 2023, who says, what is the best chicken sandwich in the UK? Popeyes has the hard lock over here in America, but I wonder what the rest of the world has. What delicious treasures the rest of the world has?
Has the what? Sorry, say that
The
again.
Lock. It's on lock. It's locked down.
I'm Googling it to know what it is. So it's the Popeyes.
Popeyes are like a... We don't have them in the UK, so we can't... Although, actually, no. I drove past the Popeyes.
Okay. So I've typed in Popeyes on lock. Is that what they say here?
Well, the phrasing of the
Reddit post just says, locking your doors, people locked inside a Popeyes.
We feel like the two oldest men on the earth trying to figure this out. Gunner says the Popeyes has the hard lock on the best chicken sandwich.
Oh, my God. I am so odd. I've had my E3 moment. I've misunderstood that it's not a name of a sandwich because I thought that it was called the Popeyes on lock, as in like it was the Popeyes lockdown.
They should do a pop and lock, though.
They have locked it down because of how good they are. Wow, yeah. That is really embarrassing for me. Okay, cool. No, fair enough. I'll
own it. Happens to us all. Look, is there's 10
live
past
demo,
two in the
guys,
afternoon.
Live demo.
It's live demo, folks. It's the way to make it work. But yeah, chicken sandwich. I don't have a go-to pick other than I've never got tired of KFC, which I don't know if there's a vegan alternative that can hold up to the fatter joints in the world, but that's what I would go for.
Do you know what? The vegan KFC sandwich that they did was pretty good. The vegan Burger King chicken sandwich is actually okay as well. But you know what? I don't know anywhere that does a good chicken sandwich.
I kind of want to start this off as a bit of hashtag discourse between now and next week's recording. Let us know, and even you can wait until next Thursday's question shout out, what the best chicken sandwich is.
If there is any sort of vegans out there who could recommend a good chicken meat substitute, I will try it in a sandwich. Go message me over on Twitter. I will try it in a sandwich, and I'll come back with my findings if I remember, which likely I won't.
That's a flashback to when we were trying those weird shots and stuff.
Oh, yeah. We still need to try them because I'm hopefully going to be coming up to see you at the beginning of July. So hopefully we'll be able to have those shots in person, which would be nice.
Maybe we can do a cheers with different types of chicken sandwiches.
That would be great. Have that with the chicken sandwich and the shots on the side. That's your sandwich. You wash it down with a shot. Booyah.
We will make it work. Speaking of making things work, this has been the Untitled Panther Podcast, the EVP, the UBP.
The UBP.
The UBP. A massive, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions. Apologies for a slightly shorter episode this week, but we'll do what we can next week. For now, I've been Scott from WhatCulture.com. I did the wrong ending again, Jules. I did the standard ending.
It's okay, mate, because you are from WhatCulture.com, but I am from the Future Game Show. Make sure you go follow us on our respective channels, and also we'll be doing the call for questions next Thursday over on Twitter. It's at RetroJ with a zero for myself and at /LP89 for Scott. One of us will put out a call for questions, so get ready to submit to our questions.
Beautiful. Thanks all to everyone. Words. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.